Hi, this is Gwen and this is Chris. Chris is the owner and founder of SES Research, and this video is to answer a lot of questions that came up.
A lot of questions
that came up about C60 from a video that I posted in January, and Chris happens to be local in Houston, so this worked out perfect. I got to meet and ask all these questions about a month ago, and so Chris agreed to do the video to really help explain C60 and people's questions, concerns, responses. So I'm super happy that he's here today. And this is gonna be just a conversation about C60, doing some demonstration stuff to answer the questions about solvents and things that people posted. So first of all, I'd like to ask Chris how he got into this crazy world of C60. And from the beginning, you know, how was your interest, how you got into owning a lab? Tell us what you...
Excellent. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on the YouTube video here. And you had to twist my arm a little bit, but here we are. So, I actually started a company with a business partner of mine, and the company's SES Research, and we started back in 1991. So they discovered fullerenes and specifically carbon-60 in about 85. And in 91, we actually visited the lab, the Dr. Richard Smalley lab. Richard Smalley is the one who discovered carbon-60, and interviewed their grad students to get the best understanding of how to make fullerenes, how to make C60. And so we got lots of great information. Actually, I was on the phone with one of his grad students yesterday, Philippe Chabante. He's a professor up in Canada. He was one of the guys we interviewed. They gave us ideas and pointers about how to make this fullerene reactor, and we made our first reactor in 1991. The reason the whole business started is kind of an interesting story. Like, backstories are kind of fun, right? So my business partner, Robert Wong, and he had another business partner, his name is Diego, I'll leave his last name out, and they decided that they wanted to make C60 and deliver it to commercial, to research institutions. At the time, 1 gram, so this is an example, this is 1 gram of C60, was selling for $6,000 a gram. So this was $6,000 of material at the time. And that's kind of why they decided to go into business. I was studying mechanical engineering at the University of Houston, and they asked me to help them kind of build the machine, and I was supposed to help them and then, you know, kind of disappear and go away, and then they would run their company. It turns out Diego was kind of less interested in the company SES Research, so Diego went away, and so Robert Wong and I have been the owners of SES Research, like I said, since 1991. And then Robert's kind of intro into fullerenes was he was working at the Texas Center for Superconductivity at the University of Houston, and he was actually separating the material, and we're going to talk about how you separate the material, what the production process looks like, but he was separating it for Dr. Paul Chu. He's notable in superconductivity, and that's when he kind of got exposed to it, came to understand that it was $6,000 a gram, and then understood that he wanted to start a business and get that started. So we've been producing and delivering commercial quantities of carbon nanomaterials, which includes C60 buckleballs, since 1991.
Wow, and it's only become popular in health applications, I know, lately. And super popular maybe in the last 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
You told me when we met that C60 has been used in lots of applications and not just health. And you said it always makes whatever it is used with better. So can you just talk about that? Because 1991 is a long time ago for it to become popular in health now. So can you give us one example?
So I kind of have this, and I've literally said this so many times, so if it sounds like I'm saying it from a script, it's because I've said it so many times. So carbon-60 performs as well or better, this is what they found all the way back in 1991, that it performs as well or better than the current best material in almost every application they put it in. So if you put it in ink, it makes better ink, but it's too expensive, especially when it was $6,000 a gram. If you put it in your tires, right, so your tires are black, it performs better, but it's too expensive. It turns out that carbon-60 is harder than a diamond. It'll actually turn into a diamond, and you can fit any element on the periodic chart inside of it.
Oh.
So what's kind of cool is prior to the buckyball, the at symbol, so we're familiar with the at symbol from email, it didn't exist in chemistry. There was no at symbol in chemistry. Now there is lanthanum, so La at C60. That just means that lanthanum is physically trapped inside of it. So if you're producing C60 and you have lanthanum around, you get some portion of lanthanum at C60, and that can work for any atom on the periodic chart. So that's kind of an exciting aspect of C60. We knew from the very beginning, because of that it was expensive, and because it was such an outlier performance, like it just always performed as well or better. They had thoughts of medical applications, but we knew that the application that would really cause it to take off would have really great benefits, and you wouldn't need much of it. And it turns out, here we are, you know, with the Bhatti rat study in 2012, when it doesn't take much C60 in this case in olive oil, and it had a very dramatic effect, like double the lifespan for the rats, for the test subjects that were taking the product. By the way, this is something I'm really proud of. SES research is actually mentioned in that Bhatti rat study because it's our material that was given to the rats. So that's kind of exciting. Did that answer kind of?
Yeah, and that's cool. And that study, I didn't know until recently, was done in Houston at Rice University. Is that right? Did you say
no,
that?
It's in Paris.
Oh, Paris.
Yeah, that study was in Paris.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Smalley discovered C60 at Rice University.
Okay.
Right, so all of this kind of fullerene, the core actually in a machine, IBM had actually produced it in one of their identical machine that they had. They just didn't notice the uniqueness of the peak of the C60 peak. There's a long kind of cool backstory, but I think we've got a lot to jump into. Maybe next time we'll talk about like who actually discovered C60 and all of that. It's kind of a cool backstory, but it was here in Houston. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting, and it makes me, as you're talking, I think I should have paid more attention in chemistry and like because my thing was more math and electronics, but now I'm thinking, wow, this is it's cool later when you go, well, there's a real application
right
that you might actually be affected by. Okay. So you guys don't just make what's known as the olive oil C60 or the different oil C60. You guys actually also sell
the raw C60.
The raw C60, yeah, to other companies that make C60. So can you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
And I'd like you to go into, some people have opinions and comments about they're making it at home on their own. Now, I opted not to do that. Like, I do not want to turn my business into a lab, nor do I feel qualified
right
to make it myself. And I've seen we'll talk about this later, but I've seen different samples of C60. They're quite different. So can you talk about, number one, selling it wholesale,
yep,
versus making it? And then also anything you have to say to people that might be making it at home that may not,
Let's keep them safe.
Yeah.
So I can, one of the things, as soon as that original study came out, I'm going to tell you, we started getting phone calls right away, how much is in a dose, right? And the scientific community, if you think back to the purpose of that study, the study wasn't to explore the longevity effects that C60 had on rats. It was to explore the toxicity. So in the scientific community, it was assumed that C60 had a very high likelihood of being toxic. That's why they did a toxicity study. And there's very good reasons for why people might assume that it's toxic, right? So one of the reasons, Dr. Smalley, who got the Nobel Prize, he got it within 10 years, which is kind of unheard of when it comes to Nobel Prizes. And the reason is because the scientific community quickly realized how important the discovery was,
mm-hmm,
right? So if you think about benzene, right? A benzene ring is, if you add hydrogens to the outside of it, it's hexane, and or benzene, and then it easily turns into hexane. So benzene is actually a very dangerous and carcinogenic liquid. It's also used in a lot of in almost the entirety of modern day society. Most plastics are founded from like benzene rings plus things added to them. A lot of medicines are founded in benzene. So on its own, it's dangerous, but when you add aggregates to it, it actually is good for society. So they made the same assumption. They said that C60 was a 3D version of benzene, and so they made the same assumption that on its own, it's probably gonna be dangerous. It's just kind of a logical assumption. And then, of course, this Bhatti rat study came out and said that it was actually safe. Now, I want to go and talk about what does the production process look like? Because you talked about people who are extracting it and people who are claiming that there's different ways to make it, and there's a couple different ways. The fundamental best way to make C60, at least at this time, and I'm aware of another technology, actually I was talking with Philippe yesterday about another technology. The best technology is actually to take two graphite rods and to vaporize them in a chamber, right? And in that chamber, you wanna make sure that there's no oxygen and you actually get better production of fullerenes. So this isn't C60 yet, it's fullerenes. You get better production of fullerenes when you do that in that chamber with no oxygen at a reduced atmosphere. So it's a slight vacuum and then you get the best production. You typically get about 15% fullerenes. And when I say fullerenes, I'm saying that very specifically because that C60, C70, C84, and all the higher fullerenes are all mixed in there. 15% of that is fullerenes. The other 85% we call amorphous carbon, and we've always just, in our industry, we've always called it carbon crap, right? That's just what we've called it. It's actually amorphous carbon, which is kind of randomized plates of graphite sheets, but 15%. Now, you typically get 15% when you vaporize quarter inch graphite rods. In your logical step, say, hey, I wanna produce more of this, is to go to a half inch rod, right? So let me burn more carbon more quickly. What happens is as you go to larger size, larger diameter rods, your yield goes down, and it goes down dramatically. So at a half inch rod, you may only get about 8% production.
Well, that's weird that you get less.
Well, it has to do with the environment, right? So in a quarter inch rod, you can imagine that the geometry around it, because this is one of the interesting things, I can address this right now, when people talk about the light sensitivity of C60. When you're vaporizing graphite rods, the light and temperature is the temperature of the sun, right? So when we were doing our production, we had to have the welder's goggles. And the reason you have to have welder goggles is, one, to protect your eyes. Two, you will get a sunburn by looking at the arc that, you know, by your skin seeing the light from the arc.
So this is why not to do this at home.
Yeah. So you don't want to do raw fullerene soot production at home. No. And so when people talk about how light sensitive it is, it's actually not as light sensitive as everyone thinks. The reality is would you take any sort of food product and stick it in the light in your backyard for long, at least not in Houston, in the heat? No, the answer is no. Mm-hmm. Even in the cool, you just don't want light. So in general, yeah, protect it from light, but all of this, there's a lot of kind of preoccupation with how sensitive it is to light. We can really disregard it. Great, everybody's selling it in dark bottles. I'm very happy about us included. But don't preoccupy yourself with that. So that's kind of the production process. So out of that, you get what's called soot, interestingly. The company SES Research, and I feel like I'm just going, but...
Yeah, I want you to.
My company SES Research, the SES stands for soot, and then extract, and then 60, as in carbon 60. And so I've just described how we make soot. Next, we've got to figure out how we make extract. And extract is C60, C70, and all the higher fullerenes. And basically what you need to do is you need to dissolve the fullerenes in a hydrocarbon, right? So that's gonna be toluene, hexane, or something like that. And this is the solvents that we're talking about, everybody is concerned about, and rightfully should be concerned about. So basically, if you imagine you've got a pile of sand and sugar, right? The sugar is the fullerenes, and the sand is the carbon crap, right? So you dissolve the sugar in sand and water, the sugar dissolves into the water, the sand does not, and then you filter it, and what comes through in the liquid is sugar water, which if you boil off the liquid, you get your sugar. And the same thing happens with fullerenes. You dissolve it in toluene. Toluene's actually the solvent that dissolves the most readily, right? So it's the one you wanna use. And then you filter it. Everything that's in toluene is a beautiful purple color. Everything that's in the toluene is C60. It's actually extract, so not just C60. So excuse me, that's more of an amber color because it's C60, C70, and the higher fullerenes. Mm-hmm. And then everything that stays on top of the filter is carbon, amorphous carbon. We'll switch our phrase.
It's okay to say crap. We can say crap on YouTube.
So, and we're actually going to do a demonstration today that kind of shows that the carbon gets stuck on top of the filter. That's what happens when you're dealing with fullerenes and amorphous carbon. So now you boil it off and we've got our extract, right? So soot extract, and now we're going to get C60. So there's a number of ways that you can separate the C60. The one of the ways that makes the most sense, it's pretty easy, you can do it on an industrial scale, is to run it through what's called a column. And what happens in the column is the different components of fullerenes go through the column at different speeds, right? So it you know, as it runs through, C60 happens to go through most columns quicker, and so you collect a purple solution. And when that purple solution starts getting diluted because the next band of C70 is coming, then you turn it off, and now you've got your, you boil that off, and now you have pure C60.
Which is this. Okay.
Now, we're concerned, right? Because we boiled off the toluene, but we just boiled off in a kind of a regular situation. If you smell that C60, you will still smell solvent. So on our website, we actually have kind of reduced the availability of the material that has solvents in it. And we did that this year because, you know, it was kind of as November last year that people really started picking up the pace on buying, producing, and consuming C60 and olive oil. And when we really kind of realized, okay, these people were actually putting themselves in a dangerous situation mixing C60 with solvents. By the way, we just had a customer yesterday. He had purchased the wrong material, the solvent material. He contacted us. There's nothing we can do with that material, right? Because we don't know if it's mixed or whatever. Mm-hmm. We can't reuse it. We've got to throw it away. But we paid him to send it back to us because we didn't want him, and not just the shipping. We actually gave him money to ship it back to us because we didn't want it in the market, right? It's just, it is C60, but it's not been processed properly for any sort of consumption. Hopefully that makes sense. So when you take that C60 that's been boiled off and you've got this black powder, we can pour that black powder out right now.
We can zoom after, I think.
Yeah, we'll pull that. I'll just pour this out. You can kind of see it is literally just a black powder.
Oh yeah, it looks like
charcoal or something that you might use, you know, in an art class or.
Yeah, it looks like black sand.
Yep. So, and that's crystals of carbon-60. So you get that. If you were to smell it, you would smell some residual solvents.
We say there's. Smell it.
This one you won't because it's been vacuumed.
Okay, yeah, it doesn't smell like anything.
So you take that, you stick it in a vacuum oven for 24 hours, and that bakes off all the solvents. So I know just to get phraseology right, on some of the YouTube videos I've seen and commented on, they talked about burning off the solvents. It's not really burning off. You're just baking them off. You're making them evaporate, and they evaporate at a much lower temperature than C60. C60, you can actually cause it to go into a vapor, which is one of the ways that you could create C60 without solvents. That's called sublimation, but it's incredibly inefficient in terms of scale, right? So we've messed around with that in the past, and that's not the way to produce C60. The best way, ARC, use solvents to separate it, use solvents again to separate the C60 from the C70 and the higher fullerenes, and then bake it off so that then you can put it in olive oil.
Okay, so Mary buys this powder from you, and then she's going to make her own bottle of olive oil. So let's get into that,
okay.
Because this is where there's a lot of discussion,
yep,
and controversy about then going to that next level. So talk about what you do to make this.
Right.
And then I know what people have told me they're doing, and I want to talk about that because that is the extraction process then of this in the oil is, I think, where people get messed
confused.
Up. Yeah.
Okay, so according to the BATI study, right, so we're researchers at heart. We've been delivering to research institutions around the world. We just want to reproduce a specific study, the results from a specific study. And so basically, we mix it, have it mixed. We put the C60 powder. Our target is 0.8 milligrams per milliliter. That's how much C60 will typically dissolve in olive oil. That can vary depending on the olive oil, but in general, it's about 0.8. And then we stir it for 2 weeks. And the reason you have to stir it for 2 weeks is because it doesn't dissolve. Have you ever made like hummingbird food or the simple syrup? Simple,
yep,
syrup that goes right into,
yep,
drinks, right? So you've got sugar, you've got water. If you just set it there and you stirred it for 2 weeks, it would actually probably go into solution. If you warm it up, you tend to warm it up, it will go into solution faster. You can actually do that with olive oil. We choose not to because it's not what they did in the BATI study. And you just want to make sure, you know, olive oil does kind of break down at certain temperatures. Hopefully you're not getting to those temperatures, and that could potentially speed up the process. So take C60, stick it in olive oil, stir it for 2 weeks, and if you under add the C60. So I think for 1 gram, it's about 1.2 liters of olive oil. If you maybe do 1.3 liters of olive oil, you kind of have more C60 than there is, like, the olive oil could take more C60. And because you're lower after 2 weeks, all of the C60 could be dissolved, and it should be dissolved, and you don't really need to filter it at that point. Because as we kind of described, if it dissolves and you filter it, then it, you know, there should be nothing on top because it should be all dissolved, right? And so our product is, what we put in our product is 99.99% C60. When you say 99.99, the kind of extra things, the 0.01 is C70 majority, and then maybe some higher fullerenes, but to a very small percent. Most of the people, we sell to about 80% of the industry who are putting C60 in olive oil, and most of them are buying 99.95. The Bati study is 99.98. That was the number that they confirmed in terms of the purity of C60. Everybody's playing the right ball game. We just want to put the highest purity material out there.
And you can, because you're the lab and you know what the purity is. Okay, so someone at home is making C60, they have the oil, maybe they're doing the right ratio, maybe they're not. They have an automatic stirrer, from what I understand, and it's stirring consistent. Is it heated or is it not heated?
It doesn't need to be
heated. It's just room temperature stirring.
Room temperature.
And then if they don't use enough C60, it's probably not as potent. If they use powder, too much powder versus not enough powder,
it just won't dissolve. So you'll end up with like a C60 at the bottom of the olive oil. So if you let it settle, it'll settle out. And you can reuse that. Right? So our process is to actually reuse that material, because we add too much C60 to make sure we get as much to dissolve as possible, and then we reuse the C60 that doesn't actually dissolve.
Okay, so it's a saturation kind of thing.
Yes.
It's like the saturation will either... It just
under
won't,
or oversaturate.
Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the Himalayan salt. It won't over-dissolve.
Right.
You know, so, okay.
So one thing just to add there, if somebody's buying C60, if you buy it from us and it's vacuum oven dried, you feel free to do this test. But if you buy it from anybody else, make sure you take the bottle that they give and smell it, and you will smell solvents. You will smell it should have almost no smell, right? It has really no smell when all the solvents are gone. If it has a smell, don't use it. Just don't use it. It should not have a solvent smell to it, because that solvent needs to be baked off.
And that's one of the big controversies, is the solvents.
Yep.
And so it's not the stirring and it's not the under oversaturation. I think that's where one of the big misunderstandings is.
Right.
Is the solvents, which is before it gets to this.
Right.
I mean, this is
before we ship it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but not all labs do that.
Right.
Okay.
And we used to sell, so we were selling a lot of the stuff that had solvents, and then the volume just went so up, we kind of took notice and we kind of understood where it was and didn't think about the implications. And then we started thinking about the implications that there are probably people buying this C60 with solvents in it and then mixing it and consuming it. So literally, if you buy from our website something with solvents in it, we'll call you. All right. First off, we've removed the 1 gram quantity. So anybody who's trying to make their own stuff is less inclined to get 5 grams, even though it has solvents in it. I mean, we've kind of adjusted what we have on our website that doesn't help. Like, the scientific community, you still can buy 1 gram, and we've still sell again to research institutions around the world. But we're really trying to protect the consumer from themselves, because I can tell you, I had one conversation. I think I shared this with you when we met. I had a conversation. It was a great conversation about what you should order. And then I saw their order come through, and they ended up ordering the C60 with solvents in it. So I called them right back, and I'm like, you ordered the wrong material. Oh, I'm so sorry. So I canceled that order, and then they reordered the right material. Here's somebody that I had a conversation, like, on our website, this is what you need to order, and they ended up ordering the wrong thing. So with all this kind of information overload that's out there, and the kind of nerve-wracking process, right, because it's very scientific, it's easy to get confused. And so, one, buy the olive oil, it's pretty easy. Two, if it really is a cost issue, it's a big inconvenience, right, to have this thing sticking, spinning in your kitchen or wherever for a long time. Just buy the olive oil. But if it is a cost issue, then yes, make sure you're doing the right things. Make sure you order the vacuum oven baked C60.
Okay, well, let's get into olive oil next. So let's talk about the quality of olive oil that you use And what would you not use? Not going into other oils yet, but what would you use and what do you use for your olive oil, and what should people avoid with using olive oil?
So in the study, they used extra virgin olive oil, right? And so I would stick with extra virgin olive oil. It just means it's been cold pressed and it hasn't been kind of heated and treated in other ways. We've got two grades. We've got a research grade where we actually buy the olive oil through a scientific distribution center, and so we get all sorts of specs on the olive oil. I think the general user doesn't necessarily need that level of detail. And then we also have a fine grade, really just to have it's sourced out of Greece. It's a better quality olive oil. And I don't know if you know this, but there people have like olive oil tasting parties, mm-hmm. right? So it's a thing. Mm-hmm. And so we just wanted to offer kind of a higher end, if you will, olive oil, and that's our fine grade. If you're on our website, it would be our fine grade. But yeah, I think anything that's not extra virgin olive oil, just stay away from. I know there are people that I respect in the industry who use Kirkland's olive oil, and it's so batched and so mass produced that it's going to be very consistent. And our understanding is it works. So I have no problem with somebody using something, you know, as commercial as that, if that makes sense.
But what do y'all use for your standard, not your upgraded oil?
So the standard, we actually, it's sourced from a scientific research organization called Aldrich, right? So we just buy from them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And someone said freshness of olive oil matters. Do you think it matters?
So olive oil has a shelf life of 3 years, and it probably depends on who's labeling the shelf life. So when you're talking in terms of how fresh it is, I wouldn't be concerned about that.
Okay.
If you're at your 3 year time frame, then you might wonder where you're getting your olive oil from. But yeah.
Well, maybe if it's someone's making it home and it was in their cabinet.
That's old. Yeah. If you've got a really, really old bottle of olive oil, let's go buy a new one.
Just
take care of yourself.
All right. And one other thing about storing it. So once you buy it, I keep mine in my cabinet on a paper plate because it does tend to leak a little bit when you use the dropper a lot. And some people have asked, well, should you refrigerate it? Does it matter if it's stored in dark? Does it matter if it's, I wouldn't want it refrigerated, but any storing?
Yeah, I think you just like you would with, well, how you currently store your olive oil is how you should store this. It really doesn't need anything special. There are some indications that having C60 in it actually extends the shelf life of it, right? And I don't remember it being mentioned in the paper, but anecdotally, I think somebody said, hey, at the end of the Bati rat study, there was still a C60, this olive oil, and it should have kind of gone rancid, and it didn't, right? So it may actually be more stable and safer than regular olive oil. So however you treat your regular olive oil is fine. And if you stick it in the fridge, you might get some kind of coagulation, which will go away. In the case of olive oil, will go away once it comes back up to room temperature.
Okay, and one person, I don't think a lot of people would normally take olive oil straight. I had actually a friend, it was Deb, that was here. And she tried my C60 and she was like, oh, there's like a little bite. And I think
peppery, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's not anything to do with the C60. That's a natural aspect of olive oil. And what I heard was that it's kind of a good quality olive oil,
yep,
that does that, that gives you that little thing on the back of your tongue. And that is not a C60 or solvent or whatever issue. So I just want people to know that, because some people say, oh, it's like, you know, kind of burns. It doesn't burn as far as I can tell, but it's more of a little bite.
It's like a peppery.
Yeah.
So they call it kind of the peppery flavor. Yeah, the higher quality olive oils tend to have that peppery flavor, and that will, of course, exist with or without C60.
Right.
Right. So yeah, and if you don't have that, then they tend to say that it's a lesser grade olive oil. Also, they'll cold press olive oils at different times, so they'll pick the olives sooner, and they'll end up with more of an earthy, kind of grassy flavor, and more peppery, right?
Okay.
So sooner is more peppery, and then later is a little bit less peppery.
And one thing I do, and I don't know that anyone ever said this, but it was kind of just a reaction of how there's some absorption that goes on in the mouth. You know, the big question, and I might get into this, or you can, is about how to take C60. And I'm going to talk about it with olive oil, because that's the only one that I've tried. That's the only one I'm going to use. I want to talk about that right now, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sounds good.
Is when I first got C60, I did 2 dropper fulls. And so this, I don't know why there's so many questions about this.
Right.
Because that can turn into a million more questions about what is two dropper fulls. And a dropper full to me is, you know, basically you've extracted up. So that's like a full dropper full. And you see it kind of drips, which is normal. And that's why I put it on a paper plate so that, you know, because it does get a little bit oily.
You already dripped, literally.
I already dripped. So I put it on a paper plate. Yeah. And so, but a dropper full is this much. And I'm not sitting there counting the drops. And as soon as I do it, I put it directly in my mouth. And I started with two, so I did two full dropper fulls. And what I do on the second dropper full is I kind of hold it in my mouth for a minute. Now, it doesn't say anywhere to do that. I just kind of intuitively did that, and then it kind of absorbs that way, and then I swallow. What I then started doing, and what other people told me, and it was actually my clients who gave me some other ideas, that some people were taking one dropper full in the morning and one mid-afternoon. And that tended for them to be a better solution. Some of my clients are quite sick,
right.
Chronic illness, autoimmune disorders, you know, some people very ill, and they were taking like two dropper fulls three times a day. Now, for me personally, if I take a dose too late in the day, it makes me not sleep too great.
Right, right.
I mean, it doesn't, and this is another thing I want to say, because this is like the biggest misconception of my clients is that they're, I guess sometimes because of the words energy, they're expecting this caffeinated energy boost,
jolt
that's noticeable. And that is not what happens. Is it's a sustained, number one, well-being. I've had people say, what is in that? You know, because they feel like just good.
Yeah.
And then I've had people say that, oh, I don't notice anything. And what always happens when they say I don't notice anything is this. I'll say, okay, well, when you first started, before you started taking it, you were sitting on the couch, you didn't have any energy to go to the gym, you weren't doing anything extra, and you were exhausted. And now you're telling me you haven't seen a difference after a month, and I start asking questions. And then the person says, oh yeah, well, I'm back at the gym, or oh yeah, I'm doing this or that, and it's stuff that they had stopped doing. And so they kind of don't notice that as an energy.
Right.
It's
not that jolt. It's like take the dropper and then boom, you're on fire.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's not that. But they think they're expecting something like that. And then I have one woman that is a big CrossFit person, but she also has Lyme disease and some energy issues. And, you know, it's like questioning, well, do I notice a difference? But, you know, then when you really start asking her about her sleep or energy, you know, she's like, yeah, I used to like crash at 4 p.m. And most people that have adrenal issues, especially adrenal exhaustion, sometimes they figure out if they do that hard morning workout, they're
only going to make it so long. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they feel better. They can make it through a day, but then they will crash still eventually. And that's actually a not a good thing to do, because they're tapping into epinephrine and norepinephrine, which is your reserves.
Right.
But they're tapping into it by these really heavy-duty workouts. Well, anyway, she starts saying, yeah, I couldn't even make it to making dinner for my family. Now she's making dinner. She's doing other stuff. You know, she's making it longer in the day. But in her case, she was taking six dropper fulls a day. She's taking two in the morning, two early afternoon, and then two late afternoon. But she's kind of having a little bit more of a normal life.
Right.
And so that's the biggest. And then I had another lady who said, I don't think I notice any difference. And this always kind of cracks me up, because as soon as I start asking questions, it's clear that they're making a difference. So this one woman said, I don't know if I've noticed any difference. And I said, so you don't see any difference. And so the way I said it was getting things done.
Right.
So instead of energy, so just take out the word energy, I said, so you don't feel like you're getting things more done. And she goes, well, yesterday or the day before, she cleaned out her hallway closet.
Right.
Which she had never done, ever. And then I'm like, well, maybe that means you have more energy.
That's different.
Yeah, exactly. And she cleaned out her kitchen cabinets, which is stuff that's probably been sitting like that for 10 years.
Right.
But she doesn't see that like necessarily
as energy.
As energy or as
an improvement. Or a change, right.
Well, exactly. But if people, I had one client said that her libido was better. You know, but most people that have low libido also have very low energy. You know, they don't have the energy to have libido, so they're just exhausted.
Right.
So if they're like exhausted by the time they make it to dinner, or you know, they're sitting on the couch, or they're not getting things done, then of course, you know, everything is related to, you know, sustainable energy.
Right.
But I think even the biggest, not even getting into the specific health issues that has to do with eyesight and other things that many people have reported, the thing that I notice is clarity.
Right.
Is cognition, clarity, focus. And I think that's also why people can get more things done.
Yep.
Is that their brain is like more on track to start something and finish it instead of running around like a pinball in a pinball machine. And so I think that that is what most people say is, even if they're, you know, not cleaning out the hallway closet,
right,
they're able to, you know, balance their checkbook, or they're able to do things that before they couldn't really identify. So do you have any other things that people have told you?
So when you think about, you know, kind of having clarity of mind, one of the gentlemen that I was speaking on the phone with, we were kind of sorting out an order, and I was like, so, and we got it all sorted out, and I was like, so what kind of experience are you having? And he said, well, I'm actually autistic, and when I'm on C60 with olive oil, I don't, so autistic people tend to get overstimulated, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when he said when he's on C60 and olive oil, he doesn't get overstimulated. So it actually helps him cope or manage, right, with his autism. And so, there's not any research on this yet, so you know, we're all talking anecdotal, and we kind of all know that. And I just get more and more confident about the product because of the more testimonials. I'm not getting, obviously I'm not going to hear, oh, it didn't work for me, and they're not placing orders, so I'm not going to really hear that. But I'm just getting people who are placing more orders and saying stories like yours, and you're right, energy and then clarity. Mental clarity are the two kind of key ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, you know, lots of other stuff talking about, I think, revitalizing like livers is one big one that I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
Just gut in general, right? And so, there are great testimonials. There are, since I profit off of the material, I need to be very careful and say that these are anecdotal statements. I'm taking it. I'm happy with it, and my wife is taking it. So we're getting good results. I can tell you, it's not that jolt of energy. So there's a. I'm not. I think we have something in common. I'm not born a morning person, and that came out of our initial conversation. And I needed to get up. I had stuff to do, but I just woke up at like 5. I've never just woken up at 5 o'clock. I just woke up at 5 o'clock, and it wasn't this jolt. It was like, I'm up. I've rested enough, let me get to work. And that's, you know, not the typical way that I am. That's how I seem to be when I'm taking C60. So.
Well, that's actually something I want to share for myself, because we did talk about that and I forgot, is that when I very first started taking C60, I'm not a morning person. And
So you didn't even realize that it was working, right?
Like, right.
I think the reason you're so good at helping other people recognize is because you were taking C60, had benefits, but didn't even recognize it. So yeah.
Right. But what was noticeable was the morning thing.
Right.
So when I took it, I didn't actually notice something specific for about 3 weeks. But what I noticed, well, by 3 weeks, I could determine it was the C60. But really, in about maybe 10 days or 2 weeks, I was just waking up earlier and earlier.
Right.
I was waking up at, 7, 6:45, 6:30. And then one morning I woke up at 5. And I was like, okay, and I was done sleeping.
Right. Like,
so I was just like, okay, well, I might as well go. There was no way I was going back to sleep.
Right.
And then I was like, okay, now I know this is really unusual, because that would never happen unless I was going on vacation and need to catch a flight.
Right, yeah.
Then I'd be jumping out of bed excited.
Deadlines.
And go like,
yeah, yeah.
So you go, okay, you have to get up. But this
right.
wasn't that. This was like, I'm done sleeping. And that particular night, I went to bed at like 11.
Right.
So I'd slept 6 hours. I was completely rested and felt fine.
And then weren't exhausted at the end of the day.
Right. Right?
So when not, night people, not morning people, if
mm-hmm.
we do have to wake up, because I can, right, if I need to, by the end of the day, I'm exhausted, right? Like, I'm ready to go to bed a lot earlier. So this was Wednesday. I wasn't, like, into the day. It was a normal, just wrapped up my day normally and went to bed. It wasn't any, like, I need to go to bed earlier because I got up so early. So,
mm-hmm.
so similar.
Well, and yesterday, I got up at 5:30, and I had a 15-hour work day yesterday. So, and that's unusual, but I did, I made it through, and I was clear and focused on everything I did all day, which was every hour and a half something different, some other thing going on. And I can say that most people can do that, you know, that they can get through a 15-hour day and mentally still be there. And I did take an extra dose
yesterday
of C60 because I knew I was working till 10 o'clock.
Yep.
From 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. So then...
I did too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So then you go, okay, well, I have the magic weapon. I can, take the extra dose. And then I had something happen that a lot of people report, and I always, kind of laugh at some of the YouTube trolls, because they always say, well, it doesn't do anything or whatever. I can tell you the morning person thing was substantial, but also these are prescription glasses, and I have a love-hate relationship with these because, like, I'll wear them and I take them off because they're too strong. When I got the glasses, when I hadn't had glasses like my whole life, and so one of my clients is an optometrist. I went over to his office and he does the thing.
Right.
And then
A or B.
Yeah, and then I didn't realize how expensive glasses were. But anyway, then by the time I went to go pick up the glasses, which was about 2 weeks later, I put them on and I was like, you know when you put on glasses too strong,
too high of a dose for the other reason. Yeah,
it gave me an instant headache.
Right.
So he says, "Well, you just got to get used to them. You haven't been wearing glasses, but it felt like I was looking through a magnifying glass, and it was bad." So then, I finally went back. This is not that pair. I went back and said, "No, this isn't." No.
Right. Something's wrong.
Right. Something's wrong. So then he measured and he was like, yeah, it's different. And then, and this was just a few weeks later.
Different, better.
Right. Different, like the prescription's off. And then I think it was like at the second pair, then is off.
Right.
And at this point, he's like, sends me to a specialist.
This is not normal.
Yeah.
Right?
And then I go. And that
he's
was during,
checking his equipment.
Yeah.
He's like, maybe my equipment's not working.
Yeah.
His eyes don't get better.
Well, not like that. And then right. It was like this change. And then Harvey happened, and I couldn't get to the specialist because she was on the other side of the flooding. Anyway, long story short is this is the third pair.
Right.
And I'm still, like, if I wear them too long, I'm like, so I don't know. The solution is I got to wait to see what the outcome is. And a lot of people talk about macular degeneration online and vision getting better, but that was one of the things that besides the getting more things done, the waking up earlier, this was my personal testimony. And then the last testimony I want to share, and I plan to do a few YouTubes with my clients' actual stories, but I'm going to share one story that is pretty exceptional. I have they're a couple, and they're good friends of mine, and they're in their 70s. And I won't mention his name y'all wouldn't know him. And his name's Art. And he's in his mid-70s, and he tried C60 after I sent out a newsletter about the benefits.
Right.
And about a few weeks later, I mean, they're, like, hooked. They buy, like, 3 or 6 bottles at a time because in his 70s, he's always been, like, a health guy,
right.
You know, a fitness guy. He's always done, like, a workout. But he said that workout had turned into, like, 2 hours to get through.
It took a long time.
And he had to rest in between and all that. And then that had turned into, after taking C60 for maybe even 6 weeks, he was doing that 2-hour workout in 45 minutes.
He was back to his normal.
And he used to be a morning person. And then he kind of slowly started sleeping more, needing more sleep to feel right. And then we were kind of joking that we're going to start calling each other at 5 a.m.
Yeah, right.
Neither
are
one of us was asleep. Yeah. Hey, what's going on? Because no one else is awake that I know. Maybe my mom. So anyway, then I saw him after he'd been on C60. It was either 2 or 3 months. So this was back in December, so it was probably February. And he looked great. I mean, he had lost weight. He had, his skin looked great. Everything about him looked great. He looked, and he told me he felt like he was 40 years old.
Right.
And that, I mean, I think, you know, for me, I didn't go into C60 with any particular health issues.
Right.
But I noticed a difference.
Yeah.
And I don't notice a difference with very many things. He noticed such a big difference that he's just like, oh my God, like this is he called it the fountain of youth.
Yeah.
And, you know, being in your 70s, if you can feel 40 in your 70s, I think that's pretty.
What is that worth?
Yeah, that's worth, you know, in everything.
Well, and if you think about, okay, this original study that's created all this excitement, you know, well, one, the last rat in the study, in the Bati rat study, they killed, right? So it didn't die of old age, they killed it. But what's the value of living, you know, 90% longer if you don't have, you know, quality of life?
Right.
And so there's nothing in that in the study that's saying, well, the rats lived but just laid there, or, you know, it's like they had a life, a full rat life, whatever that looks like, and until they passed or until they killed that last rat. And so, yeah, it makes sense that if you're taking C60 that you're going to see benefits and feel younger.
Right, and I don't want to live to be 120 if it's not feeling good.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with you. Okay, so now let's get into the other thing that is a little controversial.
Okay.
So I like controversy. I'm willing to tackle it. So, you know, there's a lot of companies selling a lot of different oils, and I know you guys are adding it out of demand, you know, some of the other oils.
Yeah, we're going to add avocado, and we're going to add, I think, sunflower seed. And really it's just because it's out there. We're probably going to put some warning, you know, just saying, hey, be aware that this is not the original study, and really there's less research, and I'll jump into this right now because this is interesting, mm-hmm. right? So there's less or no research about C60 and other oils, right? So we have the kind of pillar paper by Bhatti that was done on C60 and olive oil. There's no kind of parallel study of C60 and sunflower seed oil, C60 and avocado oil, and I think almond oil or whatever, any other oil that you might put it in. The other thing that's interesting is that there's when you put C60 in these other oils, and I actually have, we'll show you a sample here in a little bit of C60 and sunflower, actual C60 and sunflower seed oil, it's purple, right? And the same in avocado. And so when you put C60 in olive oil is a little darker by nature in general, but you don't see a purple hue, right?
You really don't see a purple hue in
olive oil. And so what that really means is that whatever component of olive oil is interacting with the C60 to dissolve it, and that's another story about kind of atomic layer particles, but whatever component in olive oil that's interacting with the C60 to dissolve it is probably different than the component that's in sunflower seed oil, that's in avocado oil. And people are taking it, and you can see testimonials about those particular products, and great, if they're working for you, great. We're just apprehensive because it's not the same material, it's not the same product that was given to the rats, and it's clearly reacting differently. It's interacting, not reacting, interacting differently with those different oils. And so when we come out with avocado oil and sunflower seed oil, we will be very clear, like, this is not, like, if you're thinking about longevity and the original Bhatti study, then this is the wrong material to take. And you told me that actually, in terms of oils and what oils people are good for people, that olive oil is actually kind of the broader based better mm-hmm. oil, or maybe you can speak a little bit about
that. I do want to talk about that, and I also want to say I will not take the other oils, and this is going to get a lot of haters on YouTube trolling us. And you know what? I'm not even going to respond to that because I have an opinion.
Yeah.
And my opinion is, for 20 years, I have been following research of blood type theory stuff, and I know that a lot of people don't believe in it, and that's fine. I don't care if you believe in blood type theory or not. I can tell you from being a health practitioner that I do see the benefits of following the foods of your blood type, at least from an angle of you haven't had specific, like, allergy testing, like maybe Alcat. Then maybe you're allergic to some things that is not specific to your blood type.
Right.
But without specific testing, I think blood type is a good starting point for what might be inflammatory based on your genealogy, you know.
Right.
So, like, anyway, I believe in it. I don't care if you don't believe in it, but this is the deal. All blood types have olive oil as either a neutral or beneficial food, which means it's either just a food, which gives you the nutrition of that food, or it's beneficial, which means it's like a healing food.
Right.
So it's actually giving you something extra,
right,
in a good way.
And that makes sense. There's a lot of good research out there about the benefits of olive oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything that people are reporting about olive oil on C60 is also, like, can be attributable, although on a much smaller scale, to olive oil.
Right. And I've seen the Mediterranean diet stuff. I've seen the women in Italy that lived some crazy age over 100 that still had, like, gorgeous skin and
right.
beautiful hair, and they, you know, these things are online, you can find them, where they did, you know, a few tablespoons of olive oil a day, and this was without C60. I pulled out some of the blood type charts, but you can find this information online. And just before we got started, just to make clear for myself, and this is true, only blood type A can tolerate the other oils, and blood type B cannot, blood type AB cannot, and blood type O for sure cannot. That's what I am. And I looked at each of the oils. So sunflower seed oil, avocado oil, and coconut oil are all a void for blood type O's. Now, what does that mean? Okay, this is my perception, is if you put C60 into an oil that's an inflammatory oil for you,
right,
meaning you either can't digest it, it's causing inflammation, it's causing something going on in the gut, then what's happening with the C60? I'm not saying it's harmful. I'm saying, is it going to work? It's almost like if you are gluten intolerant and you took your vitamins with your gluten whatever bread.
Yeah.
Are the vitamins going to absorb? Are they going to do what they need to do when you've taken it with something inflammatory?
Right.
Did it block the beneficial process? Did it block the healing process? You know,
or did it just not help? Like, did it just hinder it some? Right.
Right. Did it just become neutral? And so O's, well, all blood types except A. Now, A is the only unique blood type. So if you're A, and I want to tell you this very specifically because you guys can look this up too, is that sunflower oil for A's is neutral. Avocado is neutral, and coconut is a void. So coconut is an avoid even for blood type O's. And I just, olive oil is easy.
Yeah.
It's the one that is a beneficial or neutral for every blood type. There's no blood type that can't do olive oil. So if you look at that and understand it, I don't know why you would do the other oils. Now, the other thing is I want to talk about pets just real quick.
Okay.
Because one of the big things is about dogs. You
right.
know, dogs taking
C60. Yeah.
I would like to understand why it turns purple and what the interaction process is before I put it in my body. And it wasn't researched. I'm not saying don't do it. But some people have a strong opinion, too, about dogs. And dogs can do olive oil. Dogs can do coconut oil.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't use the other oils with dogs. I would use that. And it doesn't take much for a dog. Because
right.
when you're talking about body weight, you know, my dogs are little. They're 10 to 15 pounds. They only need, like, 2 to 3 drops.
Yeah.
They don't need 2 dropperfuls.
Right.
If you're talking about a lab that weighs, like, 120 pounds, so I tell people when they ask me is, you know, do it based on the size of the dog. They don't need a lot.
Right.
And I've seen pretty remarkable things with my dogs. My dog, he's 13, and he runs around like he's sleeping right now because he's bored with us. But he runs around
didn't
like...
Didn't want to be on the video.
No, he didn't want to be on the video. We do like 2 to 3 walks a day, and these
right.
are long walks, and he's just running around, sniffing everything. You know, he's all like happy. So I think that when you're talking about even your dogs, I would give it to my dogs. In
yeah.
fact, the original, when I first bought it, was before my dogs.
Right.
I actually didn't buy it for myself.
Right.
And then when I realized how they were acting, I was like, wow, I'm going to try this.
Try this.
So do you want to pause and do a part 2?